Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
Welcome to True Crime Cast. We got a bonus episode for you. I am here with the host and creator, Stephanie Tinsley, from a podcast, Everything They Missed. Did I say that right?
That's right. Everything They Missed.
This is a podcast that is still ongoing. I think there's at least four or five episodes out right now with that bonus episode. So it is incredible, and it is an honor to have you on today. So I guess for our listeners who maybe have never heard of this podcast before, you want to give us like a elevator pitch about what it is about?
Yeah. First of all, thank you for having me. I'm a big fan of your show. You have an episode that was released on September 2nd, the Greg Lantz story, that is close to me and this story, surprisingly. So I'm very excited to be on your show. So Everything They Missed is a story that happened in 2007. It's a savage murder in Memphis. The man who was murdered, his name is Danny Harris. And he was essentially left for dead and undiscovered for 2 months. Most likely, it was a very hurried and rushed investigation, and this podcast asked the questions why. He has two sons that were in law enforcement, and there's questions around that in a rushed investigation. There's questions around, did the right person go down for this murder? And the biggest question, if the wrong person went down for this murder, that means the real killer is still out there. The one responsible is still out there. And so my story, this podcast, is a narrative. It drops weekly, but it's a 6 to 10 episodes telling the story of what happened and answering the questions. And it's been a surprising twist of not just finding out, is the wrong person, did the wrong person go down for this? But can my investigation determine who's responsible? And if so, can we do something about it? So this is my first podcast. I'm not an investigative journalist, although I've turned into one. And it's just been a really interesting ride to be doing this for the last year and a half.
Yeah, the episodes that I've listened to so far, I would never have thought this was your first podcast. I think you are a seasoned pro already. And you said earlier that it's a narrative, but how quickly has it turned into an investigation, you know?
Yes.
So I want to be careful not to give any spoilers or anything like that, but you said, and it will be in the first episode that you'll hear this. This guy, Danny, was found in his apartment, and they presume he was dead for 2 months. First off, that is just insane how someone could lay there for 2 months without someone noticing. But the hurry up job, you go into some details in episode one about just how much or how little was done. I mean, it was quite intriguing to see your perspective on that, and how many more questions did we leave with after episode one? I mean, there's a lot more they could have done. I'll say that. Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you're writing and creating a show, you want to end on cliffhangers. I didn't have to try to find cliffhangers. Yeah. You know, the story just lends itself when there was no DNA that was collected at the scene. There were very little fingerprints that were collected. A week later, there's police going back to find receipts for a TV, yet they uncover three bloody fingerprints that they had missed the week before. They realize that there were clothes in the washing machine. I think any of us that are true crime fans, you look in the washing machine. You know, if it's a bloody crime scene, you look to see what's in the washing machine. And there were towels and there were items in there that were missed. There were a lot of items that weren't collected. So from the very beginning, there's questions. The Danny Harris's son, Chris Harris, worked for the Shelby County Sheriff's Department. Shelby County is Memphis. And he was invited to the scene. And so from the very beginning, I've been told by a lot of different detectives that I've interviewed, that's not by the book. Inviting a victim's son to the scene who is tied to law enforcement is not by the book. So it starts off with, you know, this is a very gruesome scene. And why was it wrapped up so quickly?
Yeah. And the son was called in, if I'm not mistaken, to identify Danny. But you've also got someone who hasn't spoke to their dad in 2 months. And for all we know, just because he's a cop doesn't mean he could also be a suspect. So from right off the bat, you can see how this investigation, the crime scene was not locked off. There's critical pieces of evidence that have not been fully, you know, vetted or ran through DNA. I guess when I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, was obviously we have someone behind bars for this. Was that person tried before a jury, or did they take a plea deal? Because if I'm a jury member, just based on episode one, there's still reasonable doubt in my mind.
Mm-hmm. So two people went down for this murder. Two people were incarcerated. One person took a plea deal, and that comes pretty soon in the episodes. One person took a plea deal, one person did not. And the did not is the story that I follow.
Absolutely. Right? So how did you find out about this case? What got you involved? And yeah, like how did you end up here?
Yeah. So that's a really great question. And I think it goes back to one of your previous comments about, it doesn't sound like this is my first podcast or my first time doing this. I have been a true crime junkie since before that was a known phrase. I have, since the 80s, I'll tell how old I am. I have read true crime books since I was little. I would sneak in and watch true crime shows. City Confidential was one of my first ones. I've seen every Dateline. So I feel like I have a PhD in true crime just by being a fan. But what really plunged me into the deep end is my husband, Mark Tinsley, was connected to the Alex Murdaugh murders. And for the listeners that could ring a bell, but they're not sure who that is, Alex Murdaugh was the attorney in South Carolina who murdered his wife and son. And in 2023 was his trial. Netflix filmed a documentary at our house. My husband was in it. They camped out in our house for 6 months. So did Dateline, 48 hours, every major crime show that you could see. And I'm bringing all of this up because as a true crime fan, it is exciting to have all of these shows that you've, you know, been a fan of in your house. And I was able to really study what a producer does, how these crime shows are made, what a director does, what it takes to create a great documentary, and what it takes to create a terrible news story. And so during that time, I really met some great journalists and I really met some terrible journalists. And probably the terrible ones, the ones that I could tell they interviewed victims, those were the most motivating, because in my mind, even though I'm not thinking I'm going to do a podcast, in my mind, every time I see this, I'm thinking I would do that differently. So when the time came and the Alex Murdaugh trial was over and the dust settled, I had the opportunity to reflect on what had just happened to our family. You know, I'd just been thrown into this true crime story, and it was horrific for all those involved. It was traumatic. And I had the opportunity to think, if I could find a story and tell it, how would I tell it? And I knew that I didn't want to force anything. I wanted something to pop up organically for me. And in episode one, I tell the story of when my son gets in the car. And, you know, I'd been looking for a case for several months. And one day my son gets in the car and says, my friend Lucy, who I know Lucy, in school theater, Lucy and all her little friends, I put their makeup on for the school play. So I knew Lucy. Lucy got up and told us about her dad, Jason Gishner, who's a lawyer. And for those, there won't be a spoiler alert, but you'll learn in episode 5 who Jason Gishner really is. But Jason is a lawyer. And my son told me about some of his work, and I thought, that's very interesting. And I went and talked to Jason, and he told me about a couple of cases. And he told me about the Greg Lance case, which you all covered just a few weeks ago, right? You all had, yeah. Am I right? I think I remember listening to it. Okay. And so he had told me about the Greg Lance story. And I spent about a month researching that. And it, for whatever reason, it didn't work out. And Jason told me about this particular case that I decided to dig into. And that's how it came about. It was a very organic, not forced. But once I heard the story, and now that you're getting a good look into it, it's just something I couldn't let go.
I would imagine that for the people in the area where this happened, I bet that even though it was quite a while ago, they're still talking about it. But now this podcast is out. I'm interested to know, do you feel like the community in that area has heard about it? And what has their response been, if so?
Well, so the murder happened in 2007. And quite shockingly, it was not a big news story, which is interesting because the victim had two sons in law enforcement. One works for the sheriff's department, one worked for the police department. So you would think a horrific murder where the man laid there dead for 2 months and his two sons were in law enforcement would be huge news. I could find very little about it. So that was intriguing to me. Why wasn't more talked about? But lately, the Memphis community has gotten a hold of this. And I get responses from two camps. The locals, the everyday community, very excited to learn more, very interested to learn more. Law enforcement, there's nothing to see here, which is really interesting. Even as late as last night, I got a phone call and someone had just talked to one of the lead detectives in this story. And that detective said, shut it down. There's nothing to see here. Really? Really? So, and then when I hear community, so that's the Memphis community. But when I hear community, I also hear the true crime community. And I think you had mentioned that the production value of the story is so good. It is, because Tenderfoot, one of the best true crime networks out there, has partnered with me on that. And when Donald Albright, the CEO of Tenderfoot, heard about this story, immediately he said, I'm going to make time for this. I'm going to make time for you. This is important. So the true crime community, you know, like you, when they listen to it, have really embraced this because it's a very true crimey, dark story, but it's got all the twists and turns that you don't expect.
Absolutely. I wouldn't be sitting here today without Tenderfoot. Some of their early stuff in Up and Vanished is what, you know, made me want to do a podcast, because I've always loved true crime. But when I heard Up and Vanished, I was like, oh man, there is such a need for this. And still, they have some of my other favorite shows of all time too. So yeah, you've got a lot of support, and it's awesome. What do you hope, like, what's your overall goal for this? I feel like I know, but I just want to hear it. Like, what's your overall goal for this show?
So my overall goal for this show is justice for Danny Harris. And the goal for the show has shifted from the very beginning. I believed at first the goal was to shine a light on, did the wrong person go down for this? And I think by answering the question or saying what I want the goal to be is justice for Danny, it solves that first question too. And I think that it's going to, I'm hopeful that it's going to happen. And in, as you see, as the episodes are unfolding, there are opportunities to either make that goal happen or not make that goal happen. And there's certain persons, people that can make it happen and can't make it happen. One is the DA in Memphis. And so I think that we're going to have the ending that everybody wants, but there's also a big, I'm going to release 6 episodes and then we take a 2-month break and then we come back. And in that 2-month, I don't know what's going to happen. And it could, there could be something catastrophic that happens. And so we'll be reporting all of that.
Yeah. Again, it's an incredibly well done show. I mean, in the show, you get to hear from the person who is in prison right now. Is that correct?
That's right. So Andrew Hayes, he has been in jail since 2007 because when he went in for his 27-hour interrogation, he never went home again. Andrew has an IQ of 62, which is equivalent to a third grader. He has a 7th grade education, but his IQ is that of a third grader. So after 27 hours, he confessed to a crime that he now says he didn't do, but his confession matched 0 evidence at the scene. So he confessed to killing Danny on the back of the head, 2nd-story apartment, 2 weeks ago. And the evidence showed it was front of the head, not back of the head. There is no second story. I've been to Danny's apartment. And it wasn't 2 weeks ago. It was 2 months ago. We knew that because of the pacemaker. So what he confessed to didn't match anything at the scene, yet he was tried and convicted. And I've spoken to Andrew. I've spoken to him several times. I've talked to him through his lawyer, and then I've visited him. I have visited him in jail twice. He's at the Northwest Correctional Facility in West Tennessee. I have never been to prison before. That was a new experience for me. And, but one that when I took this story on, I wanted to talk to everybody. And that meant talking to Andrew, talking to Andrew's family, talking to experts, detectives. So I went all in.
I don't want to say the, I don't want to give anything away about your interview with him, but I will just point out for our listeners who haven't heard the show yet. I mean, he tells you why he confessed. And I think our listeners need to go check that out and just hear his voice, hear him in his own words, tell you why he confessed. And I will point out also that, yeah, you mentioned the 27-hour long interview, none of which was video recorded or audio recorded. So we really don't know what was said to him in that interview, but obviously to anyone with at least a few brain cells, he was given information about the case that he either didn't remember or was incorrect, but they used that in his confession, and he is now serving his prison sentence because of that.
That's right.
You, I'm sure, have learned a lot more about this case than you knew initially. Is there anything that you're able to talk about that you would say is the most surprising things that you've learned? And maybe you can't because it's too big of a spoiler, but.
No, I think I can. I think I can address that without spoiling things. I think the biggest thing that surprised me was the access that I would be given. As the story unfolds, you'll learn who the access is coming from. But from the very beginning, I was very surprised to learn I was going to talk to Andrew. I was going to talk to family members, investigators that had never talked to anybody before, cops that had never talked to anybody before, prosecutors that had never talked to anybody before, and suspects. That was the biggest thing. That was the biggest thing. So when you listen to the very first seconds of episode one and you hear that voice, when I also heard that voice, I thought, I've got to talk to this person. And so just having that access was surprising to me. And as the story unfolds, you'll see that there's evidence that points toward another person, that there is, a group that is saying, it is not Andrew, it is this specific person. And that person's family members shocked me when they all wanted to talk. And when they all wanted to say, we know Andrew is in prison for this, but our family member brags about this murder. Our family member talks about this murder. And that was a shock to me that not just one family member, but there's at least four that contacted me and said, we know that you're doing this podcast. We also want justice for Danny Harris. We also believe the wrong person went down. We want to tell you about our family member. How shocking is that?
Yeah, that's so pretty telling, isn't it?
Pretty telling.
Jamie and I always, or at least most of the time, end our show asking if justice was served. Of course, from some people's perspective, this case is open and shut. There is someone serving a sentence. Justice has been served. But I will say wholeheartedly that if the wrong person is spending their time serving someone else's sentence, then no, justice has not been served. So I'm excited to hear this case unfold. And I guess I just want to end by saying or asking, like, what's your confidence level in this podcast being over and the right people serving justice? Do you feel confident that we're heading down that path? And maybe that's not a fair question to ask.
So it's a good question because, you know, in true crime stories, we like finality. You know, like when we watch an hour-long Dateline, we like to know what happens, and we're frustrated if we watch it and we don't know the justice was served. So it's a great question. And I keep that in mind because I don't know how it's going to end. What I do know that even if you've already caught up to episode four, you still don't know because all of this is coming in episodes 7 through 10, the true shocker of the story. Something happened the day before we released the first episode. I get a message on X, totally unexpected, that said, I want to be part of the story. I want to talk to you. The most jaw-dropping message I've ever gotten. I wish I would have gotten it a year ago when I started, but of course it happens the night before. And because of that message, it changed the trajectory of this whole show. And I do believe because that message came to me and this person wants to come forward, that justice will be served. It's the smoking gun that only a show like this, that only a podcast, that only a show like, you know, yours could uncover, because this person would not have spoken out otherwise. So I do believe that justice will be served. If it's not, you can better believe I'm naming the names. You'll know if justice isn't served, that I will lay out exactly what has happened and exactly, and I've got audio and I've got all of the stuff that it would take. So I do believe that justice will be served. And I do hope that the person responsible serves time for this.
Absolutely. Again, this is our interview with Stephanie Tinsley from a podcast, Everything They Missed. This is an amazing podcast, and it's not to sensationalize the podcast, but what you're doing for justice is incredible. So thank you so much for everything that you do and for coming on to the podcast today. Why don't you tell our listeners, I guess, where they can find you on social media? And of course, we'll link that in our show notes. But yeah, where can our folks find you?
Thank you. So you can find me across all socials at the Stephanie Tinsley. And the show website is everythingthemiss.com. It's got the official trailer for the show, which is a killer trailer. If you're obsessed with trailers like I am, it's an amazing video trailer. And yeah, shoot me a DM, reach out to me, tell me your thoughts about the show. I want to hear feedback. I'm excited to keep telling it and for hearing from people.
Absolutely. And guys, if you do check that out and you enjoy it, please share it. Social media, word of mouth, this goes a long way. And this is not just about a story that's entertaining, but this is about justice and someone who may be being punished for someone else's crime. So yeah, Stephanie, thank you so much for everything you do. And thanks again for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.